I guess my first question is, Dave, just when we think we don't have to talk about the group Anonymous for a while, now here they are making a comeback.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've been around almost 20 years now, and they tend to be what we would call hacktivists. They're not so much in it to try to, you know, extort money or do anything like that, but to make a point and to go after what they view as social injustice.
So they're kind of just technological rabble-rousers then?
They are, yeah. You know, sorry about that.
Oh, you're fine. Take all the time you need.
Everything's binging and dinging at me. They are kind of all over the world. You know, they're not sitting in a building somewhere. It's really kind of a loosely organized thing. No real leader or anything like that. They kind of meet up in different types of chat rooms and private things and discuss things. And when they all agree that, hey, you know, we'd like to go do this, however many want to do it, take off and start. So it's not like, you know, some military operation or anything. It's a bunch of hackers that just like to do this sort of thing. They've taken down, they attacked the Church of Scientology previously. They've gone after child porn sites. They get involved in political things, obviously, like Russia and the Ukraine. And they just kind of wreak havoc.
So when Anonymous says that they're declaring a cyber war on Russia, I guess, in a sense, what does that mean? What are they looking to accomplish here?
You know, that can be from simple to complex. So let's just talk about kind of some of the things they've done already. Right before Russia actually invaded the Ukraine, they did a couple of cyber attacks. One of them was they took down the Ministry of Defense in the Ukraine. And the other thing was they took down a couple of major banks in the Ukraine. They do that as kind of psychological warfare to let the Ukrainian people know, we can control you if we want to.
Warning shot type of things?
Operations. Warning shots, exactly. So, you know, what else can Russia do? They can do things like take down critical infrastructure, affect power grids, the flow of gas and oil, take down banks, take down all kinds of different industries. You know, obviously one you worry about in the Ukraine is that shows my age. in Ukraine is there's nuclear power generation. That's where Chernobyl is, right? Mm-hmm. So the amount of targets and the amount of damage can go from social engineering, where they're just trying to instill fear, to causing actual destruction. Having said all that, I think you'll see Anonymous counterattack in the same ways. So they've done that. Anonymous took down the Ministry of Defense in Russia. They took over some media outlets and played the Ukrainian national anthem. Most recently, they hacked into the train system in Belarus, which has been carrying Russian soldiers into the Ukraine. So they actually disrupted the logistics of moving soldiers into battle. So I think you're going to see kind of a back and forth. As Russia tries something, you're going to see Anonymous say, so what, we can do that, and here's one more.
I'm glad you said that, because I was getting the impression, I think for a while, that maybe Russia was probably pretty good at doing their own hacking and things like that. So maybe it sounds like Anonymous is saying, anything you can do, I can do better here.
They are. Now, Russia is very skilled at cyber warfare, and they come at it at two fronts. One of it is they have their own government-sponsored hacking, you know, division. But the other one is they house a lot of hackers and hacking groups in the country. And so, you know, it's an easy flip to get those that are not under government control to help their government, since they're, the Russian government also helps protect them. So they have a big pool, a very talented pool to draw from to do their own cyber warfare. One of the nice things about, you know, and officially, by the way, I condemn all things that are illegal. Having said that, with Anonymous keeping Russia busy on the defensive side, you know, all of the hackers are trying to prevent Anonymous from doing things in Russia, it reduces the pool of offensive players in Russia so that they can't focus 100% on wreaking havoc elsewhere in the world, especially in Ukraine.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess there's a positive to all of this there, maybe.
There is, yeah. So it's like in a football game, right? If you keep running the ball, you eat up the clock, and you don't let the other team get to play offense. They're always on defense. It's kind of a similar thing with what Anonymous is doing to Russia right now, saying, okay, we're going to keep you guys busy with our shenanigans so you can't do your own shenanigans.
I guess so. As I kind of move on here, the question I guess we as reporter types always have to ask ourselves when we talk about these things is, how does this affect me? Is this something that could affect us here in Illinois or just in the U.S. in general? Or could they somehow, Russia and Anonymous, just all of a sudden turn all their attention to the U.S.?
They certainly could. Russia certainly will at some point to some degree. I think Anonymous has drawn a line and said, look, we're on the side of NATO and the United States, and that's why we're attacking Russia. So I'm not worried about Anonymous at this point, but, you know, it was hackers in Russia who took down the Colonial Pipeline. And, you know, that shows the vulnerability in our critical infrastructure, and it shows that the Russians have the skills and the ability to actually inflict chaos in our critical infrastructure.
So then the things we need to do in terms of tech here, I guess probably the simple things like, you know, keeping, you know, virus definitions updated and that sort of thing. Are there other things maybe us regular folks should be thinking about as maybe we hear about some of this stuff?
Yeah, so especially if you are a remote worker and your laptop at home is connected to your corporation, the easy way into the corporation is to come through a remote worker, because typically a laptop doesn't have the same level of security that was previously had when they were in the building of the corporation and kind of under the corporate shield, security shield. We call it a perimeter. So to get to the laptop, hackers would have to go through the infrastructure that the corporation has. Well, you move that laptop out from under the corporate perimeter, and now it becomes the easy target. It's interesting that you mentioned antivirus, because antivirus kind of isn't enough anymore.
Yeah.
There's new products out called Endpoint Detection and Response, EDR, that's much more sophisticated to protect the laptops that are outside of the corporate shield.
Okay. So those are the types of things that we should have in addition to virus and whatnot?
Yeah, so it's actually even much easier than that, Will. There's what we would just refer to as cyber hygiene, and those are simple things, and they're inexpensive things, right? Use long, complicated passwords. Don't use the same password in more than one account. Use multi-factor authentication. So that's like when you sign on to your banking app and it sends your phone a text to make sure it really is you trying to sign in. That can block about 90% of hacking attempts just by itself. So make sure you're using the multi-factor. Keep your operating systems and software up to date. You know, if iPhone launches a new iOS release, we think, oh, good, we're going to get new emojis, right? What it really means is there's a known vulnerability, security vulnerability in the phone, and they have patched that hole now. And so you want to make sure you stay up to date with the software, especially the operating system software, because that is actually blocking holes that hackers could use to get in. Same's true with laptops and Windows, or, you know, the Windows updates. People are like, I'll do that later. Those things are really important.
I don't even use all the emojis I have on my iPhone now, so I'm right. Not even concerned about that.
Yeah. So, but I mean, these are the things, you know, that people just don't tend to do, and it's the way 90% of hacks occur. It's much easier to trick you into giving up your credentials, your user ID, and your password by using a phishing email, for instance, than it is to try to hack in and capture that electronically. So right. Phishing emails, you know, don't click on links in emails from people that you don't know. Even if you do know them, if it looks a little suspicious, call that person and say, hey, did you really send me this new friend request on Facebook? You know,
yeah.
That's an obvious sign that somebody's been hacked. So, you know, keep your mind sharp, keep your eyes open, keep your stuff updated with the latest versions of operating systems and software, change your passwords, use something that's long and complicated. We usually call them passphrases, where it might be more of a sentence that you can remember than mm-hmm. just a word or your dog's name, you know, for instance. And make sure you're using multi-factor authentication wherever you can, so that it does, in fact, send you a text or check with you in a different way to make sure you are the person entering the login information.
Okay.
We just talked about all those things, and it's all free. Just know that the U.S. is on a very heightened alert. We work with the government here on some of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we are, you know, all eyes are open, watching our infrastructure and watching for what the Russians are doing next. And we've got a really solid team of people in the United States, a lot of them.